Okay, I am currently the asshole with my phone on during the reading. That's okay. Okay. Oh no. Come back to me. Okay. When Gregory Orr asked for a poem that set lyricism, imagination, narrative, and form in harmony, he was asking for the work of Dorsey Craft. To refer to Dorsey's poetry as lyrical would be both an understatement and a diminishment of her work. Because while every word floats in on a cloud of sound, Dorsey opens us up to scenes and stories that have the same immediacy and clarity as the most exquisite prose. Dorsey challenges the postmodern imagination, suckled for so long on quick spurts of emotion and often fabricated surprise, by letting each poem unfold syrup slow, as if she is both the female Fitzgerald and the modern day bishop at once. Dorsey's work has recently graced the pages of such literature magazines as Ninth Letter, Salamander, Crab Orchard Review, Mid-American Review, Notre Dame Review, Calyx, Tinderbox, and Vinyl. She recently has been the recipient of many awards and honors, including being named the Best New Poets nominee for McNeice Review, receiving the Joyce Scantlebury Award for Poetry, and having her book, Bones of Wrought Iron, selected by the Crab Orchard Review Series as a finalist for their first book award. Whether Dorsey is spending her time with her husband's barber or the 18th century female pirate Anne Bonny, her lines touch us like the soft-spoken spikes she alludes to in her poem, Cheval de Frise, luring us in with their haunting beauty, gouging us in our inky ribs, and then leaving us to regard the wound she's left us with as holy. Ladies and gentlemen, let me get the hell out of the way for Dorsey Craft.
Hey, y'all. Thank you so much, Alexa. That was a beautiful introduction. I feel like I have a lot to live up to. My first poem is entitled Sonnet for the Instructor at Verticality Pole Fitness. The pole dance class is on tonight at 8. To loosen our hips for shaking, we spin a screw through the cork, a bottle of white. Talk about what my husband said. How can you call it stripper size if you don't strip? And then, do you? We walk in, hands cover, our grins disappear behind a silk slip of curtain to place our keys, our silver rings in darkened drawers. You dim the light, your loose hair pouring and splashing the brass. You swirl like ice in a bucket. Elongate, you whisper, hand on mind. Raising a glass to swirl, smooth whirling, impossible to stop. My first twirl a spray, bubbles after a pop. My next poem is called What All Have You Done? At 13, we all joined Tri-Q, hometown sorority our mothers had formed and forgotten. As soon as they got real bids, became curly blonde 80 pies or pert bobbed Kappa Deltas, and got about the business of husband hunting with zeal, formerly reserved for exclusion, though they still complained when we all got letters. We participation trophy kids never leave anyone out. But first, a week of initiations from older sisters, who said they would know if we lied. We grouped like bouquets in the president's yard, waiting our turns, getting our stories straight, while her white linen mother twirled the phone cord. Had we hooked up or only made out? Was second base touching breasts or going lower? What makes a virgin? Then they blindfolded us. Sometimes bandanas are tied loosely. The wearer can cheat, see down, or make out shapes. This one was tight and long enough to go around my head twice and hang down my back. The president's fingers twined mine, led me up steps, through a door to giggles like kernels of corn popping, coconut shampoo, teeth clutching mint gum. The cruelest girls have the strongest accents. When they speak, it's not molasses, it's dirt roads muddied after rain. They asked the three things about me, about all of us that mattered to them. Do you smoke? Do you drink? What all have you done with a guy? Perched in front of a room full of voices, I was grateful to have seen a shiny silver fridge, someone else's mother, my first time invited anywhere in a while. Breathing hard but surrounded by girls, the president's sweat on my palms. I don't want to tell you what my answers were, but I didn't lie. A year later, I watched younger ones, hair stuck to gloss, most whispering no, no, nothing, and hugging themselves steady on a bar stool brought up from the kitchen, a few flashed braces at friends who gave them cigarettes, sometimes accidentally looking right at me. Once I saw a girl stand up, tear the dark scarf off, and say, "Fuck y'all, I'm done." We were quiet then. We heard her thumping carpet stairs, heard downstairs mothers asking, "What's wrong, sweetheart?" A red heavy door slammed, and we cupped our ears and strained to listen as if we were all still blindfolded. So that's a little about me. My next poem is called Ode on a First Kill. When we were 19, my father put his hand on your Chicago shoulder while you, new boyfriend whose parents didn't allow guns, who raised dark eyebrows at my camouflage sweatshirt, leaned against the concrete table at the shooting range and propped the rifle barrel on a sandbag to aim at the paper shape of a deer circled in red. When you pushed your eye into the scope's metal edge, the clap of your first ever shot sang, and I was grinning at my dad when you looked up with blood in your eyelashes and drizzling your lips, the smile before you registered our faces touched your nose and said, "I'm bleeding." My father was first to move, used his sleeve to blot your face, and I thought of boys I knew in school whose fathers had dipped thumbs into bullet holes and fingered brown buck's blood under eyes, across foreheads, posed for photos hoisting heads of bodies lolled on tailgates, boys whose faces were marked by rivulets like those forming on your cheeks, coursing paths as I held you and walked to the target to see your scattered holes in a white, bloodless neck, and you didn't need stitches, but sometimes when we leave the movies to step out onto bright sidewalk or when the lamp cuts across your face in bed, I can trace the pink inch of dented flesh where new skin came to the top shining, where red rolled down, where my father tried to wipe it clean. This one is called Hernia. Just before Christmas, my father's intestines bloomed, emerged pink from inside eroded stitches, were nudged back in again by white latex gloves and sewn up tight like a football. For 6 weeks, he cannot lift anything heavier than a gallon of milk. He makes his way through mazes killing zombies, a computer game recommended by my husband. And when I imitate his zombie-slaying face, he warns me that laughter tenses his stomach muscles. While he naps and my mother teaches, I sweep the leaves off the porch, feeling each clutch of the broom in my belly. I scoot the potted plants with my feet and use my back to push the picnic table. I take the ornaments off the Christmas tree and climb the attic's shaky wooden ladder, turn its bare bulb to illuminate each box of red and green orbs pressing against their tissue paper insulation. The tree is too tall to fit through the living room door upright, so holding heavy clippers over my head, I snap off its top along with the angel who goes in her own paper, her own plastic box. Outside, I pitch the tree onto the hill of ash where we burn branches that fall in the yard. When I light the match, our tree goes up quick, like the fire has been tucked all along inside its needles, trying to get out. I'm going to read two Anne Bonny poems in a row now.
Yes.
Anne Bonny is a female pirate from the 18th century who often dressed as a man to have the freedom that a man has, we'll say. The first one is called Anne Bonny, Marooned with Child. When he left you, you sat in the surf a day and night. Let the lap of Caribbean obscure your thighs. Let the minnows run their silver races across and finches tear red cords from your scalp. You hoped the fists in your belly would unclench, cease their restless tumble, and let you bleed into green sea. He has left you with his mistress. Mornings you are up before her stained aprons and crushed cheeks and gambling brood to prowl with cutlass, bash the stalks of bamboo that spring to defend savory corners of this island. Inlets clutched with oysters, nests of neat grouped eggs. You bring each step down hard to dislodge this nine-month knot that marooned you in stinking hovel, nothing to steal but the hours between tides when none but you can stand outdoors, the absence of breeze that draws the flies and mosquitoes to feast on your dead man's feet, your cursed belly. You've given thought to opening him across the hips when he returns, to slick the deck with the squalid red that he keeps so precious. Those gooey thickets beneath graying flesh, sunken depths of the body he's never had to share. And this one is called Anne Bonny Contemplates Her Hanging. The floor is solid as flesh, rogue dust golds a last crack of afternoon through stone. You flick the wisps unstitching at your sleeve, mark the dirt corner with a stream. You have warmed your hands on the backs of broad turtles. A plum as large as the lump in your man's side. When wild, you've turned it like a knob, piece of him, stay put. Your father is not coming for you. He mildews beneath a spiked gate, or else his children pull at his trousers, begging praline, penny, scraps of red ribbon. Rusted sun dwindles on your fingers. Ungloved, they've peeled men's scalps from skulls. Sewn busted eyebrows tight, and your face is not the one you left with. That one, sunk in bonnets and pinked at a suitor on the steps, has fallen flaked into the sea. New skin rose like tide, warming your thighs, mornings you anchored in estuaries. Tonight you will wear the sting of piss and salt dotted behind your ears, creaking with harbor's din. Tonight they will pull your hair from beneath the noose, as though clasping a necklace, arrange it like lace. But what part of your body has ever known its place? What knot ever tied your shoulders could not slip? Okay, I'm gonna read Cheval de Frise next. It's about the gate in front of the Miles Bruton House in Charleston, South Carolina, where I am not from but visited frequently. You can't say you're from Charleston if you're not from Charleston. It's a thing. So, Cheval de Frise. These soft-spoken spikes, a century dull, baked black in sun of this peninsula, remember themselves body ready, sharp to burst between thin bones of a palm, slick to red with the rich energy of veins. Forged to cage wilted azalea, paint cracked over wood, wrought to be the inky ribs to preserve gray lungs beneath. They glisten, solid under the tang of tourists' pink hands, these frozen strands of Atlantic dark that sling themselves skyward, singing the salt prayer for their iron skins. Let us crystallize, alter these elements, fuse for us fresh pulses that we may become more than what was meant. And this is my last poem. It's called Bones of Wrought Iron. Suppose I could tumble into the Charleston Harbor and waves could weave my hair to roses, float me in dark until I forgot the jagged fault lines underneath. Suppose a sand spur's hooked in my foot and the skin on my heel is Charleston and my eyes hurt from reading the newspaper from that paper mill furling over the bridge. Suppose my mother took my hand and dragged me all over Charleston where people don't play music on the streets. The music is bottled and comes out of vending machines like Coke. Maybe my hair is salted full of sand gnats. Maybe I bled on a cannon aimed at the sea. Suppose the children in Market Street paintings were nailed to their joggling boards. Suppose the bridesmaids in plantation weddings wore dresses of red clay and devoured cake with stained teeth. My mother smiles when she directs strangers to the slave market, when she explains those bright colored houses, how they'd send slaves to the pink, the purple, the green. I hate to talk about these things. If the cobblestones cracked, teeth would bubble over the streets. They'd be pink, purple, green, and sharper than steeples. Suppose my mother had palms like pine bark that stung when she clapped, that her skin melted and broke like praline. Suppose we were braided together into a sweet grass basket and saw the sun in slits and someone lit a match. I need to talk about these things. I need to smell horse shit behind carriages in the street, and I need to tell people about Charleston because my bones are wrought iron fences. They held me up like iron earthquake rods hold up those Charleston houses when the ground shivers like skin brushing off a fly. Thank you.
All right, we're going to have the briefest of intermissions, so come back in a bit.